14th Annual Annapolis Summit here at the Governor Coward House in Annapolis, Maryland. And I do want to thank once again our sponsors for making this happen. Our media, our print partners, the Daily Record, we couldn't do this without them. Stevenson University, the Maryland State Education Association, the Johns Hopkins Center for a Livable Future, Alexandra Cleaver, VPC, and of course, WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, where this will be broadcast on, as well as on the web, and all that coming up. And we begin this every year, of course, with the governor of the state of Maryland. We want to welcome Governor Hogan. Welcome, good to have you with us, Governor.
Well, thank you. Good morning. It's great to be with you.
How are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
I do want to begin by just saying that I am personally, and we all are, relieved that you won your battle with cancer, and that was very tough. We were all pulling for you. My wife had her battle with cancer and breast cancer much years back. I know the personal and emotional pain that goes with all that, so I'm really glad to see that you're fit and fiddle and hair coming back and back here in the seat.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that. Everybody has been wonderful all across the state and around the country. I can't thank people enough for the prayers and well wishes, and I'm happy to be back and happy to have like a week's worth of hair.
It's coming back. It's coming back. It's coming back. They say you never know what it's going to look like when it finally finishes after this.
I have no idea what it's going to look like.
Well, welcome. So, and folks, let me remind you all, there is a microphone there. There's Anthony McCarthy by the mic. And if you have questions for the governor, we're only here for like 25 minutes or so more with the governor. So if you have a question for him, I encourage you to please get up to the mic now and to have your questions heard.
Thank you.
There's a lot going on. One of the things that the Sun quoted you as saying when you talked about the, I guess you were referring to the cuts you want to make in taxes, as well as the question of mandates, which we'll talk about in a moment. And you said that anyone that isn't in favor of that probably doesn't deserve to be in the legislature. I can't imagine anybody would vote against these. That sounds like you like threw down the gauntlet there.
Well, not really. I mean, it was taken out of context.
The real question,
I think, was we were talking about the fact that our tax policies were basically Democratic ideas, and that we were focused on helping the most vulnerable of our citizens, and that our tax cuts were focused on helping people at the lowest end of the income scale, seniors on a fixed income, and the smallest of businesses who are struggling. And I said anybody who didn't care about struggling seniors or working families or small businesses probably didn't deserve to be in the legislature. So it was a little offhanded remark, but it was a different question. And so,
well, quotes are always dangerous.
Yeah.
About what quotes end up on
sure.
in print. And
well,
so
we talked for about a half an hour, and that was about a 5-second answer to a question. So. You have to watch the whole tape.
So, in that, before we turn to the audience here, and I said I turned to them early. When you were on my show back in 2014 and were running for governor, and one of the things you said then was that you wanted to, you planned to cut $1.75 billion in waste, fraud, and abuse from the Maryland budget, and you released kind of details of the $121 million in budget savings. So, and have talked about mandates, and which we I want to hear your what you're proposing on mandates. But does that, I mean, so in your time here, have you been able to find that $1.75 billion worth of waste, or is this kind of where
sure,
we are
so last year we inherited a $5.1 billion structural deficit and a $2.1 billion deficit for 14 and 15. We've eliminated 90% of that, and it was quite a chore. But we did squeeze a lot of money out of the state budget, and we took, other than education, where we had massive increases and record funding, every other department we cut by 2%, and then we found additional savings in multiple departments, and we're still working on it. But we've made tremendous progress, and we went from being $5.1 billion in debt to having a surplus.
The surplus, of course, is partially due to the economy has kind of grown. The
economy's been doing great.
Right?
We promised to turn the economy around. Of course, we can't take all the credit for it. But the fact that Maryland is now open for business and our entire administration is focused on economic development, growing the economy, creating jobs, we've gone from last to first in the Mid-Atlantic region in job creation. We've added 53,000 jobs. We're now growing jobs at one of the fastest rates in the nation. So our income tax revenues are up. Businesses are doing better. They're having their best year in 8 years, business community. So they're making more money. They're paying more taxes. More than two-thirds of all of our citizens, Democrats and Republicans, feel that we're heading in the right direction. So they feel more comfortable spending money, and they're buying more things. So the economy is growing, and it's helping. Our revenues are up, and our expenditures are down. And as a result, we're much closer to being balanced.
So going back to where we started, then we're going to go right to the audience here, to Brian, see if is there waiting from the Daily Record.
He's ready to pounce, it looks like.
Well, I'll come back to this question. Let me let Brian Sears have his question. Brian Sears.
Good morning, Governor. Good
morning, Brian.
I was wondering, last week you had announced a proposal to limit mandated spending in years where revenues don't match the proposed spending. Critics of this plan already are saying that this is really code for cutting health care and education and would hurt the neediest folks at the time when they need government to help them the most. How do you respond to those criticisms and the claim that this is really about cutting education?
Well, first of all, let's just talk about cutting education for a second, because there's been a lot of talk about that. We have added $250 million to the operating budget for K-12 education. We've added over $600 million in new funding for school construction. So it's a total of two different budgets, but it's a total of $850 million in new spending on education. Last year, I was the first governor in the history of the state to ever put any money in GCI in his first year as governor. This year, working together with the legislature, and thanks to their urging and our cooperation, I'm going to be the first governor in the history of the state to ever fully fund GCI in a second year. So we've had dramatic increases in education, in spite of the rhetoric to the contrary. It's a fact that no other administration in Maryland history has ever spent more on education, and it's pretty substantial increases. So as far as cutting education, that's not happening from our administration. When the legislature fools with the mandates and you have a BRFA, they make cuts to it up and down every year. So during the years from 2009 to 2015, Governor O'Malley and the legislature together, through making adjustments in the BRFA, actually cut $550 million out of the mandates for education. We haven't done that. We're fully funding it. So it's a big, big wide gap between the rhetoric and the reality. Let's just say both of us agree. I think most people in the legislature, most of you here today, and me and my administration, education has been and will be our number one priority. The mandate relief is just common sense. So everybody thinks that an overwhelming majority of Marylanders thought that the state was way off track and heading in the wrong direction. They didn't like the fact that we were so far in debt. They didn't like the fact that we had increased taxes by $10 billion 40 times in a row. It's why they elected me governor. They were pretty frustrated, or you wouldn't have a Republican governor, right? They didn't like the direction we were heading. There's been an overwhelming shift in public opinion. Now they're very happy with the direction we're taking because of the progress we've made over the past year. But we're limited in the progress we can make, because out of every dollar, only 17 cents of it can we control. 83 cents of every single dollar is mandated increases in spending. It's just not any way to run a government or a business or a household. It's like the average person, if you said, we're going to force you every year to spend way more than you take in, do you think that's a good way to balance your family budget or your small business? It doesn't work for government. It doesn't work for people. It's just common sense. So we want to work with the legislature. I understand there's some resistance. We're willing to work with them on the specifics of how we do it. We simply think that we ought to take a look at the formulas, take a look at the mandates, and say, is there some way we can do this better while still providing for our top priorities of education and healthcare?
I'll wait for some questions to come back. I just want to let other folks have a chance first, if we don't mind. Go ahead.
Good morning. I'm Betty Weller, president of the Maryland State Education Association. You've spoken in the past about hitting the pause button, those are your words, on Common Core and PARC testing. So do you intend to take any specific actions to do so this year, or are you waiting for the state's recommendations on standardized testing before you take action on either of those fronts or on the issue of overtesting in schools in general?
Well, I do think I agree with the teachers union on overtesting in general. Absolutely. That's one. I know we don't agree on everything every day, but that's one we 100% agree on. I think most people agree that kids are overtested and we're wasting too much time teaching to the test and instead of trying to teach the kids more important things. But we're going to wait and take a look at the state's recommendations before we take any action.
Thank you.
When you say we're overtested, what are your thoughts about that?
I think we're overtesting. And we're going to wait for the recommendations and see what we can come up with. It's not on our radar screen. It's not a priority for this session. And we'll be happy to listen to the teachers' union and anybody else who has thoughts on this.
Thank you. Good morning, Governor.
Good morning.
Thanks for coming today. I really appreciate it. I'm a teacher down in Montgomery County, and we're having trouble with schools over capacity. And we want to make sure that we have modern, high-quality, safe schools for our kids. And there have been rumors about possible changes to regulations, or there were never even any regulations in the first place, to reduce building standards so projects would cost less. And President Miller and Speaker Bush have put together a panel on school construction to develop recommendations. What do you hope those recommendations are, and what do you see as the next policy steps for Maryland's school construction program?
Well, it's a great question. I don't know what the Speaker or the President's thoughts are on school construction. I don't think they have produced a plan or any recommendations, so I can't comment on their recommendations because I have no idea what they are. But I would venture, my guess is that we all agree that we ought to build quality, world-class schools, but we ought to do it as efficiently and cost-effectively as possible. I can tell you last year when we, at the Board of Public Works, when we have all the school systems come in from all 24 jurisdictions to talk about funding requests and requirements, when we're talking about school construction funding, which, as I mentioned, we've increased by $600 million, almost every single county complained about the fact that we were spending so much money to build schools. In some cases, they thought that we were wasting between 20 and 35% of the money we were spending on construction, and if we could find a way to do it more cost-effectively, we could actually build more schools. And that's the real, your start of your question was about school overcrowding. So you can build one really expensive school or three reasonably priced schools. Which one is going to help us with school overcrowding? So we're anxious to be a part of the dialogue. I think next Wednesday, I believe, at the Board of Public Works, we're going to have that discussion. So we look forward to having you join us there.
Thank you.
So I want you to, before we go to our next person who's stepping up to the mic, we'll go right to you in just 1 minute. I want to get a little dig deeper in the weeds when it comes to the mandates and the question of the state mandates, which cover education, healthcare, public safety. Are there exact amounts you want to see this cut?
Look,
how are you planning to address them?
Let me just say this to you. We're several weeks ahead of schedule because we believe in transparency. We wanted to set the tone. We wanted to get the legislature to know at least the broad themes that we're interested in having a discussion on for the next 90 days. Session hasn't even started yet. We don't submit our budget for a couple of weeks. We're not going to submit our legislative proposal for several weeks. So you're not going to get all in the weeds and all the details today because we don't have them and we're not ready to announce them. But you will, and we'll have 90 days to talk about it.
There seems to be, in some ways, in the legislature, a line being drawn that you can hear from some of the state legislative leaders around the question of mandates and around the potential of cutting money for public education, where they're saying there's a line they're not going to cross.
Let me just again say to you, I have no intention of cutting education. We haven't cut education. We've increased spending on education. We're doing it again this year. Last year was record funding. This year is even higher record funding. It's $850 million more. It's not less. There were some arguments and disagreements about adding another 60-some million.
68 million.
That's 1% of the money we spend on education. It's not like some devastating impact. And there isn't any cuts. They're all increases. So We'll have plenty of time to debate with the legislature. We haven't even gotten started. These guys haven't even got to work yet. We're going to see them later today when they open up the session.
Yes, you will. We all will. And they'll be here shortly to talk about that. I mean, your initial budget last year, you proposed lowering the inflation factors for that education formula. That didn't happen. So, I mean,
that's not true. There's a bonus funding formula called GCI,
right?
Which in his first year, Martin O'Malley put zero into. I added 50%. Didn't cut. This year, we're fully funding it. So you can keep talking about it, but it's just not true. There weren't any cuts. We didn't submit a budget that was lower. We submitted a budget that was higher. Only in Annapolis and only in political speak can you say massive increases are cuts.
No, I didn't say cuts. I don't want to get stuck here, but I didn't say cuts. But you did in the beginning
lower the inflation people listening, factor. If they spend more, they don't think they're spending less. That's just common sense.
No, I understand. But I was talking about the lower when you want to lower the inflation factor, that can, in out years could be tantamount to cutting.
Look, here's the fact. This year, we're dramatically increasing spending on education. We're fully funding the formulas, all of the formulas, for the first time in, I think it happened once in 8 years under the O'Malley administration. We're doing it. It's quite an accomplishment. We're not rolling things back. We're moving things forward.
Okay. Let's go back to the audience.
Hi, Governor Hogan. So I'm going to try to make this as brief as possible. So my name is Destiny Wofford, and I'm from Curtis Bay, which is a community in South Baltimore. And in Curtis Bay, we are one of the most polluted zip codes in the nation.
I'm sorry, they're the what?
One of the most polluted zip codes in the nation. Like, when you live in Curtis Bay, you're more likely to die from lung cancer, respiratory disease, and suffer from asthma. I say this because even though we suffer, we're not victims. In fact, the community has been working to make South Baltimore a home for like recycling and composting and truly green jobs. But there's a huge problem, which leads into my question. So there's a plan to build the nation's largest trash burning incinerator less than a mile away from the community. Despite the fact that if built, it would be the largest source of mercury in the state. And it's set to receive state subsidies to produce, quote, tier one renewable energy. So my question for you is that I'd like to know if you have a position on this particular incinerator, if you know about it, what's your stance, and also what's the role of incineration in MD or Maryland's green future?
Well, first of all, no, I don't have a position on it because I don't have the facts. And so I appreciate your concern about the issue and thank you for the question. And we have a number of our staff in the back here. I'd be happy to have them talk with you. You want to talk with our Department of Environment about the particular issue so we can get your thoughts on it. We'd be happy to work with you on it. But yeah, I mean, in general, look, I think people are surprised at the way we've moved on protecting the environment. People didn't expect that in our administration. As an example, last year, phosphorus was the number one problem we had with the Bay. Everybody here, Republicans, Democrats, liberals, and conservatives can all agree that our Chesapeake Bay is our greatest natural asset. It's a national treasure. For 8 years, the previous administration talked about doing something about phosphorus, but they were unsuccessful because they couldn't bring the parties together. They tried to force just one side of the debate from the environmental community, but didn't engage others. So an entire region of the state, the Eastern Shore, felt there was a war on them. The entire ag community and the poultry industry felt that they were going to be put out of business. So we, in 6 weeks of being governor, brought all of the parties together because I believe in bringing the stakeholders together, really looking at the facts and letting each side see the various issues and positions of the other side. We hammered out an agreement on phosphorus that some people have called the greatest environmental achievement for saving the Bay in a generation. We did it in 6 weeks, didn't get done in 8 years. Our representatives are working very hard on strengthening and speeding up the process on clean air regulations here in Maryland. So We're very sensitive to the environment. We have, I believe, our environment secretary, Ben Grumbles, is one of the best in the country. He's received wide accolades from the environmental community. He's working with business. And as long as we can do things that protect our environment without killing our economy or killing jobs, we're going to be out on the forefront of them. So with that particular issue, we'd love to get with you and hear more about your issues and problems you're having in Curtis Bay.
That would be great. I'd love to have the opportunity.
Thank you.
And I think what they were talking about in Curtis Bay was the idea that their zip code, 21226, if I have it right, is probably one of the most polluted zip codes in the United States of America, full of chemicals, mercury, all kinds of things in that community. And what the community is trying to do there is, they've been on our program numerous of times, before your administration and since your administration, which has to do with not allowing this incinerator to be built that would add to that, but trying to create different kinds of industries in their community other than and they've been trying to talk to your DOE. I think they were there, and they sat there. People got arrested, I think, for sitting in the secretary's office. But I think that's the heart of their issue, is what kind of businesses can they grow there? Because you've been talking about manufacturing and jobs. They're saying that's the wrong kind of jobs to put in their community, and I think that's where they're kind of focusing it on.
Okay.
Good morning, Governor. I'm Father Ty Hollinger. I'm pastor of three parishes in Baltimore. I'm here with Interfaith Worker Justice and United Workers. Given the realities that affect today's working families and the fact that 40% of Marylanders are unable to earn paid sick days, do you support a proposal that will allow workers to earn up to 7 paid sick days per year while requiring businesses with fewer than 10 employees to provide job-protected unpaid sick days?
Well, I know this is a topic that we're going to be debating and discussing over the next 90 days with the legislature. There are a number of different proposals, lots of different ways to go after this issue. Look, we all agree more people need more sick leave, and they ought to have their needs taken care of. We also don't want to kill more small businesses in Maryland. So we've lost 8,600 businesses over the past 8 years, most of them small, with a handful of employees. And we don't want to put additional burdens on them where the people actually lose their jobs while trying to gain more benefits. So we haven't taken a position. I'm not a member of the legislature, so I don't get a vote on these issues. There are 2,500 pieces of legislation, as I understand it, that are being discussed. We're not going to, first of all, haven't seen any of them, and we're not going to take a position on all of them. But if something were to make it through the legislature in both houses, we'd certainly take a look at it and give it every consideration.
So what about the potential veto overrides people are talking about from last year? The felon's right to vote, which was to extend the right to vote to people who are on parole and probation. That's one, and the several other ones have come up. What's your thoughts on what happened at the end of last year and what might happen at the beginning of this year?
Well, it's not. I mean, I think there's been a lot of hype about Democrats are going to send a shot across the bow by overriding these five vetoes. I think it's a little overdramatic. Out of the hundreds of bills, I think 800, some 900 bills have passed, we vetoed five of them. It's very reasonable. I think previous governor may have done, Bob Early probably did 27 or 30 in his first year. We had differences of agreement on a couple of them. On the forfeiture and on the toking while driving bill, the marijuana bill, we just thought that there was things that needed to be cleaned up in the bill. And it's my understanding that the legislature, there are bills that they're working on to try to fix the problems in the bills that we raised. So that would be fine. The one that I think I'm most concerned about is, look, we signed 8 pieces of legislation on criminal justice reform and granting people more rights and a Second Chance Act. We already have in Maryland the right for former felons to vote. So the big misrepresentation on this, every single story I've read says the governor vetoed a bill that would allow former felons to vote. That's not true. Former felons can already vote in Maryland. In fact, it's just a misrepresentation of the facts. This is allowing current felons who haven't yet served out their sentences, that are still on parole or probation, that haven't finalized their debt to society, and whether we should allow them to vote.
Right.
And I disagree with it, and I believe an overwhelming supermajority, somewhere around 80% of the people in the state, are opposed to that. So if the legislature wants to override the veto, they certainly have that right. They have a supermajority. They have the ability to do that politically and legally. I just don't think it's a good idea.
The argument, of course, was made on the program here the other week was that these are men and women who have mostly served their time and not gone to jail, probation, and parole. They're taxpayers.
I've heard all the arguments. I just disagree. I'm well aware of what it does.
Good morning, Governor Hogan. My name is Sharan Lindsay, and I am the founder of Thorn Recovery with a partnership with National Pike that deals with behavioral health. I applaud you for being one of the few state officials that have recognized that substance abuse in Maryland is plaguing our nation. However, I don't know if you are aware that as of yesterday, MDRN, which is Maryland Recovery Net, has closed their doors to enrollment for any addict that is looking for treatment. So good providers such as our organization is suffering for lack of funding. We spent money last year for Narcan to revive these individuals. However, the hospitals are not equipped to do long-term care, and the quality of care in state of Maryland is lacking. We are literally sending our problem and our residents to other states such as Philly and Georgia. So has the state actually looked at dealing with the bullet hole and not dealing with the Band-Aid?
Yes. Well, thank you. First of all, thanks for your efforts to help deal with this terrible problem in our state. As I was traveling around the state running for governor, everywhere I went, in almost every single jurisdiction, I heard about this problem of heroin and opioid abuse. And I knew it was a big problem, but I was shocked at the magnitude of how it had reached through every aspect of our society. You know, I went into the smallest of towns and communities. I was in Caroline County, or one of small rural community on the Eastern Shore, and I said, what's the number one problem facing your community? I thought they'd talk about some agricultural issue, some transportation issue. They said, heroin is our number one problem. I was in St. Mary's County in Southern Maryland. They said 97% of our crime is heroin-related. I went to Washington County, on the Western Maryland, heard the same story. So we promised to try to bring this issue to the forefront of the debate and discussion because it really had kind of been swept under the rug. People weren't talking about heroin. It was something you'd rather not talk about. And we have a serious problem here in Maryland, but it's nationwide. And it's not easy to solve. But I put the lieutenant governor in charge of a heroin task force. We put some really smart people to work on this issue, and they spent the entire past year holding regional hearings all around the state with hundreds and hundreds of people that came to testify and talked from about every aspect of the issue, from treatment to recidivism, to the problems of how it tears apart families and communities, what do we do about stopping the interdiction of it, stopping the crimes that happened in the first place, keep the drugs from coming in. How do you help people that are addicted? We've already taken steps to make sure that Narcan is being more readily available. We're taking steps to make sure that you can get it without a prescription. I think the legislature cares about this issue. We care about the issue. It will be a part of our legislative package, which we'll be unveiling in the next couple of weeks. We may not have all the ideas and the answers, but we would... We really look forward to working with the Senate President and the Speaker, the members of the legislature, on trying to find common ground because we've got to take steps. So, yeah, we are going to put more emphasis, more focus, and more money into the problem. And, we're going to work to try to get it fixed. It's an almost insurmountable problem, but it's one we can't just ignore and sweep under the rug. We've got to focus on.
So I know you have to run here in a couple of minutes. So coming back to where we began. Just to conclude, and it has to do with the question of taxes and cutting taxes and where we're going. I know as a Republican governor of a mostly Democratic legislature, this is a dance that politicians play about how to get done what they want to get done. So I'm curious as to, I think we all are curious, as to what your plan is. We talked about, in the beginning, what you talked about, the massive waste and fraud you thought existed in state government. Has that viewpoint changed since you've been in state government? If you found it, where is it? And how do you view that fiscal future?
Well, I think we've cut more out of the deficit than we thought we would be able to. The deficit was much deeper than we thought it was. We originally thought it was a $2.1 billion deficit. It was a $5.1 billion deficit. We've now taken care of 90% of it. We've made more progress than I expected to make in, you know, streamlining and cutting stuff out of state government to get us down without hurting services, without laying off employees, without eliminating departments. So I'm very proud of the success we've made in that area. On tax relief, last year the legislature worked with us. I said we were going to repeal the RAIN tax, which most people said would never happen. Every single Democratic member of both houses who had voted for it before voted with us to repeal it. That was an amazing display of bipartisanship, and I thank them for working with us on that. We pushed for tax relief for our veterans with their retirement taxes, and the legislature worked with us on that. This year, we're going to try to extend that to all retirees, not just veterans. We're trying to help the most vulnerable, the lowest income folks, and the smallest businesses. After the session ended, we didn't get enough tax relief during the session to stimulate our economy, so we took it on our own. We cut tolls by $270 million at every single toll facility in the state. First time in 50 years it's happened. Put that money back in the pockets of taxpayers. We eliminated 100 fees, which nobody even noticed, but it was saved another $51 million. And so we're on track. We have already done a total of about $600 million in tax cuts. We're proposing another $480 million. But when you think about it, these are very modest. We're not talking about eliminating the sales tax, getting rid of the income tax. It's not some, you know, draconian thing that's going to destroy government. It's a tiny, small, modest step in the right direction to help the people that need help the most after 8 years of $10 billion in tax increases. And most, I would say more than 90% of those taxes were regressive taxes that hurt the people that were the most vulnerable and at the lowest end of the income scale. We're just trying to give them a break. They're the ones that need the help the most. So that's what I said yesterday. I maybe didn't say it as articulately as I could, but what I meant to say was that these are ideas that Democrats and Republicans do agree on and should agree on. And these are the people that we all agree we need to help. So we shouldn't have major opposition in the legislature. They should be working with us. A couple of these ideas have been proposed by Democrats in the legislature in the past. They just haven't been enacted yet. Now they have a governor that supports them. Let's work together. Let's provide the tax relief for the people that need it most. Let's continue to rein in spending and continue to increase spending and investment in the areas that we care about, like education.
Governor Hogan, thanks for taking the time with us here this morning, this half an hour. Good to have you with us.
Thank you so much.
And I look forward to next year and down the road and see where we are with this legislative season.
Great. Thank you.